Hello and welcome to an all new episode of Talking Foosball Extra, the Jaufstieg edition. My name is Nick Wiltang and today we're going to chat about the following topics. The Stadtderby captivated all of Germany before the match and the match itself was just brilliant. Magdeburg have seemingly secured enough points to stay in the Bundesliga too. Today we're actually going to take a closer look at producer Aiden's favourite side, and the madness in Zwickau continues. This time around, a sponsor is throwing beer at the ref. Joining me to talk about all of these things and a whole lot more is my trusted panel of experts. First up, there's a man who's still trying to make sense of life after a rather disappointing Stadtderby. It is St. Pauli superfan and lowly ref, Mike Krückemeyer. And Mike, right about now, are you looking into new hobbies that you could pursue during the weekends due to the frustration you must have experienced last weekend?
Well, to be honest, I visited a Lego fair on Sunday.
Wow.
Yeah. So this might be something for the future, but to be honest, no. There will be two new derbies next year and we just need to secure those 6 points. That's it.
Love the optimism there. In addition to Mike, there's as always Jasmine Barber. Lego fair seems to be on Mike's mind when it comes to, you know, other pastimes for the weekends. Do you have any tips for Mike as well, Jasmine? What he could do instead of watching St. Pauli play football, if that indeed becomes too frustrating?
Well, I saw the Kenyan government supporting their team in something called rollerball.
Rollerball?
So I'll probably be rollerball. No idea what sport that is, but maybe look into that because I know I'm going to see what that's all about.
I mean, rollerball sounds dangerous, fun, exciting.
Is rollerball the same as roller derby?
No, I don't think so.
No, it's something else?
I think it's something else.
I mean, it's sort of like, I don't know what it is, but yes, I want to look into that. Anyways, we'll just take a short break, and after the break, we are going to talk about the Bundesliga 2. Right, here we go, and needless to say, it is not often that the match that all of Germany was waiting for on the weekend was played on a Friday night and is played in the Bundesliga 2. But this time around, we had the Stadtderby between HSV and St. Pauli being played at the Volksparkstadion. Mike, you dished out probably a kidney and a functioning bit of your liver to get your hands on a ticket. Tell us a little bit about the experience you had that day.
Yeah, well, it was, of course, a Champions League experience because I paid 59 euro for that single ticket and it was not black market. It was just the official price for the away end. And it wasn't even the most expensive one. So thanks for that, HSV. We, the St. Pauli fans, met at the Jungfernstieg at the Alster Lake in the heart of the city. And then we went with the S train to the Volksparkstadion, or at least as close as you can get, because from the train station, it's still a 3.5 kilometer walk. But it all went well, more or less. The night before the game, we had the usual ballyhoo between both fanzines. So St. Pauli fans decorated the giant foot statue of Uwe Seeler with 5 stickers on his toenails. HSV put some butyric acid on the Jolly Roger bar, which also influenced a public playground nearby. And you can now decide for yourself what is the smarter way to open a rivalry day, especially if you have tasted that acid smell yourself in the past. So being there, done that, don't need to do that again. And especially I don't really like it if it also affects others. Yeah, well, then there was this football game, some debatable referee decisions, an own goal, terrible miss of chances on our end, and this is how you lose a match 4-3, which you might not need to lose, but I'm sure Jasmine might explain that in a more sophisticated way.
Well, Jasmine, this match was truly mad at times. I mean, where would you even start in describing this particular match from the standpoint of a tactical analyst?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't particularly say that I am the more sophisticated one, especially when explaining things. I can be probably as a little bit all over the place a bit like that match, but...
You're the most sophisticated of this bunch.
I very much doubt that. back to the match. But yeah, I think, honestly, it wasn't anything special. It was pretty much a standard, a more possessional side versus one that sits back a little bit more in counterattacks. And it had a lot more clinical finishing or luck, especially in terms of the own goal that happened, like Mike said, especially on Hamburg's part, the more clinical finishing. But I think it shows the quality that Hamburg have throughout the side and the quality to score that many goals from a low amount of chances and shots on goal. Sampaoli had more chances on goal, and I think it had that mix of especially Hamburg getting tired, nervous and a bit complacent, which kind of opened up the game like as we saw it. And I find it really funny, I think I've said on countless times on this podcast about Robert Glatzel being Hamburg's main striker, but not managing to be as clinical, and especially in shot conversion. And I think this game kind of showed it more, that even though there was four goals, Glatzel wasn't involved in any of them. And that kind of fits into that. So it was really odd because, yeah, a lot of the Hamburg side was clinical apart from their main striker. Played a really nice fluid game. Sampaoli definitely worked the counterattack a lot. And especially with how nervy Hamburg can be, as we've seen in many games before, that really opened it up.
It did. And I mean, if you had to pick a favorite of the goals from that derby, then, I mean, I think what really struck me about the Hamburg goal, well, there was one own goal, which, you know, is a bit of luck on HSV part, unlucky for St. Pauli. Then there's the goal by David, which is a, you know, it's just a thrilling long-range shot, which, I mean, what's the XG for that? It's probably not that high. And then you have Yatta's goal, which is scored from a very tight angle. And he, you know, he gets really hurt because the goalkeeper almost gets to it and is there. So out of the first three goals that Hamburg scored, you could say, well, wow, all of them were either unlucky or very, very unlikely goals as well.
Yeah, I think that's something to agree with. I think especially like the kind of quality in finishing from Yatta. And who is on the other side again? Yatta, Glatzel, and...
Königsdörfer? No, Königsdörfer came in second half.
Königsdörfer came in.
Did anyone?
Dompey, of course.
Yeah, I think that's the kind of quality that they've kind of invested in. And I think it's still true that Hamburg still has a problem with being clinical in these easy shots, but somehow pulling off the magic that we've seen in tight shots, tight areas, low XG chances, which makes them a little bit more unpredictable at times, but especially with everything that goes around HSV all the time, chaoticness, that would be a big win for them, even though they tried to throw it away at the end.
I mean, what you're basically saying is that if Julian Brandt was a Bundesliga 2 side in terms of the finishing, he would be HSV.
Oh, and that's a bit harsh. Julian Brandt.
He's from Bremen as well. Oh, damn it. Sorry. Sorry, Julian.
His brother's still in the youth.
He is indeed. Anyways, now, moving forwards, both Düsseldorf and St. Pauli lost on the weekend, which means that the top three looks like it's not going to change for the rest of the season, as there are only, you know, five matches left. So let me just walk you quickly through the table as it stands right now. Now, they're Darmstadt on 61 points. They look like they are in control, but behind them there are Heidenheim on 57 and HSV on 56. So this is going to be a very tight and exciting race. So who has actually got the better cards on their hands in this one, Jasmine?
It's quite a difficult one. And despite Darmstadt being like having that comfortable cushion 4 points above Heidenheim, they have... I don't know. Darmstadt, it feels like nothing can faze them at the moment. I think if anyone saw Mike's Twitter over the weekend saying about Darmstadt's record over Karlsruhe, which not even I knew, has spanned... How long did it span, Mike?
40 years.
40 years.
So 40 years, no home win against Karlsruhe. And you might think, well, then there were just two or three games. No, I think it was 12 or something.
Wow.
So unbelievable. 1980.
And yeah, they've turned that curse around 2-1. And for a while we thought, they're going to mess it up against Karlsruhe too. Nope, they stood their ground. If you can beat a 40-year curse, you're probably going to be promoted. They've already bettered their points from last year, which was 60, and 60 is a very unlucky number to not be automatically promoted by. They're already on 61. On top of, but this is where things get interesting. Darmstadt and Heidenheim, both their last five games have their opponents average around 1.46 and 1.49 points per game. So their opponents are kind of middle of the road. Hamburg, however, have the easiest run of any team in the Zweite Bundesliga. Their opponents only average 1 point per game.
So on paper, HSV should actually be favourites to take the championship, almost.
And we all know what that means.
Yeah. Probably not the championship, but to be promoted at least second and force Heidenheim into third, because Heidenheim have the hardest of the three and also are only 1 point of Hamburg. Darmstadt's obviously 5 points of Hamburg. But also, when you look at the opponents Hamburg have, yes, they are easy, but you know, you could see them slipping up at a Regensburg or a Greuther Fürth or even a Sandhausen. It's those teams that they don't really like to play. Yeah, it's just the ones that they aren't so good at facing. Darmstadt's been very wild. They're kind of, it doesn't look like they would lose to many teams, really. I mean, they've done all their curse games. The only other team they really had a curse with is Düsseldorf and Regensburg. They already lost their first game against Regensburg, and they've gotten that out of the way. And Fortuna Düsseldorf is one that they always lose. They've gotten that out of the way. And then there's Heidenheim, which you really can't place. They have the hardest one, but mainly because they face Paderborn away. But apart from that, yeah, it's really close in contention. I honestly think Darmstadt just stay first, and it's a toss-up for second, third.
I mean, what's the danger of having the kind of run that HSV is having is obviously they're playing against a lot of sides who are still fighting relegation. And the other sides that might play against Heidenheim or Darmstadt, yes, they might look more tricky on paper, but at this stage of the season, they've got nothing left to play for. A lot of players thinking, I don't want to be, you know, injured during my vacation in the Caribbean or wherever I'm going.
Heidenheim have Sandhausen and Regensburg, so that's another two down for
that. Yeah.
For relegation.
Last question about the derby then, now that we drifted slightly off topic. But Mike, there was a whole brouhaha going on in the Hamburg and national press after the match. And, well, the guys who were clashing heads once again, St. Pauli coach Fabian Hürzeler and, you know, your favourite guy, Tim Walter. What was that all about and what shall we make of it?
Yeah, well, as you say, it's my favourite guy. Probably I'm not the right person to judge this fight, but let's put it in a polite way, maybe. They do have a history together after a match 6 years ago when Walter was still coach at Bayern under 23 and Hürzeler was the player coach at FC Pippinsried. And it seems they are still not best friends. In the end, you need to either love the behavior of Tim Walter at the sideline or you hate it, and Hürzeler seems to decide for the latter, and this is the same as me.
Well, there you go. You boiled it down to just all the necessary details. Well, as last Saturday night, I actually had managed to put both of my boys down at a reasonable time. My girlfriend was away on a cruise, which she found out was mostly frequented by pensioners. It was nice for her. So I got to watch the evening match of the Bundesliga 2, which I don't get to do too often, really. And, well, boy oh boy, what a match it was between Eintracht Braunschweig and 1. FC Magdeburg. Jasmine, can you give me a quick rundown of the highlights of that match for those of our listeners who maybe haven't watched that match?
If you haven't watched the match, seek out some highlights. Just go and seek it out. It's a good game. But it was a bit of an odd one. Magdeburg dominated possession in the first half, but both teams got into good spaces for chances, goal chances. But the clinical finishing was a little weak, just a little weak, with both sides only having one shot on goal. One of these shots ended up being a Magdeburg goal from Moritz Brüning-Quarteng, which was, it's an incredible goal. He basically plays a 1-2 with himself before a wonderful finish just curls it around. So definitely search the highlights for his goal. And in the second half, Ito makes it 2-0 for the visitors with another great goal. And Braunschweig really came out fighting in that second half as well. And even though they pulled one back, they couldn't overturn the 2-0 deficit, and it was ended up 2-1. It wasn't enough. But yeah, really great game. Both really great sides, both the way that they play football, even though they're very different ways of playing football. But from two newly promoted sides, it was a great showcase of talent.
Yeah, I mean, what got me about the match was the fact that it was really intense, it was physical, but, you know, the game was still, you know, flowing freely a lot of times, so it wasn't one of those start-stop matches where it was like a tackle every 2.5 seconds and the referee blows the whistle and, oh, well, there we go again, it's another free kick. It was actually pretty free-flowing, and as you said, the talent on show there was actually, it was really entertaining. I was thoroughly fucking entertained on my, you know, wild Saturday evening. Now, Magdeburg, one of the teams we talked about, they are on 35 points now with that win, which means that they seem very, very likely to have secured their existence in the Bundesliga 2 for another season. I mean, who would have thought after they finished 17th in the Hinrunde? I mean, what has Christian Tietz, former HSV coach Christian Tietz, done to make this team gather points? And, you were touching a little bit about that in your previous answer, but what kind of football is he actually playing?
So, Christian Tietz, he's always been quite a good coach. He was at Rot-Weiss Essen, he was at Hamburg, I think, where most people would have remembered him from. He's very possessional-based, I think. And there are similarities in the way Hamburg still play and how Christian Tietz lines up his team. 4-3-3 offensive, likes the ball on the ground and plays it through from the back. And he's someone you want to take your time with under a club because he's better at building something up, and he's been allowed to do that at Magdeburg. And you know what? Even though they were 17th in the Hinrunde, my prediction was that they would stay safe. And so I'm glad that one of my predictions in the Zweite Bundesliga is doing somewhat well. And I honestly think Braunschweig will make it as well, because they're another team that have done very well in recruitment and the way that they play. So in terms of Magdeburg's case, they did lose three of their players to Paderborn coming into the season, including Selot Conte, who was amazing for them last season in the Dritte Liga. But some of their recruitment and replacements have been class. They got Quarteng last January, who is one of the league's best performers in his position this season. Barish Atik's always been wonderful. They have Ito on loan, who obviously scored that goal on the weekend. And they got the likes of Herbert Bockhorn, which is a great name, Herbert Bockhorn, from Bochum on a free as well. So that's the kind of moves they've made. They've really stabilized themselves in the team and got players that really work in Christian Tietz's system.
Great. Well, Mike, we do love to focus a bit on fan culture on this podcast. And, what can you tell me about the Magdeburg fans?
Yeah, first of all, I need to admit it's a really remarkable atmosphere in Magdeburg from the home supporters. And they also managed to bring that to their away games with a huge and intense away support. And you might compare that to Dynamo Dresden, and although there are always some people that you probably wouldn't invite for dinner, they don't have that bad history of violence or political disturbances as Rostock or Dresden have. So therefore, yes, I think they are a big benefit for the league, in my point of view at least.
I mean, my favorite story about the Magdeburg fans is the fact that one of the stands in their stadium, they actually had to put up signs saying that you're not allowed to jump because this stand is about to get crushed if you don't stop to do that.
Yeah, they do have some kind of a ritual where they jump all at the same time, and they were not allowed to do that anymore. So I think there has been some works being done in the last couple of months, and so I think they are allowed to do it again, but I'm not sure on that.
And another thing I really observed about them this season is that they are big on the scarf action.
Yeah, correct.
As Mike doesn't want to expand on that, go onto YouTube and figure out what I'm talking about there. I'm sure there's some videos there. Anyways, well, if you're not of a certain age and you're not a big football history nerd, you probably never know that Magnus has a lot of greatness in their history. So, Mike, give me the cliff notes of what these guys have accomplished in their long and illustrious history.
Yeah, sure. Well, they are one of the biggest clubs in East Germany with a big tradition, and they were national champions 3 times, won the cup 7 times, which makes them the record holder in the cup. And of course, they are most famous for their European Cup Winners' Cup victory in 1974. So they won the final in Rotterdam against AC Milan. And well, traveling was not that famous at that time, but it was really a historical bad attendance of just 4,644 fans in total. And of course, yeah, well, the supporters from East Germany were probably not allowed to go there, at least only a few. Fun fact for that game, they are one of just 2 games in all European competitions that won a club a cup only with players from their own region. Can one of you name the other?
Oh, it was easy. FC Vatican City.
I don't think they never did a European Cup.
My first... The Vatican Cup, have you heard?
Bilbao.
I mean, Athletic Bilbao would be my first shout.
But have they won a European Cup?
I don't think so. I mean, but that's like...
That's the answer. That's all no. Yeah, okay. It's Celtic, of course.
Oh.
In 67.
Oh.
Yeah. When they won the cup in Lisbon.
So Magdeburg and a bunch of Catholics then.
Yeah, probably. Well, as for many big clubs from eastern part of Germany, after the reunion of Germany in the early 90s, they were forced to the lower leagues for many, many years. And they came back to second Bundesliga in 2018. Got down again, but now they are back and they are here to stay.
They are. I mean, the last time they were in the Bundesliga 2, they actually had another former Hamburg coach who, do you remember who? One of the greatest Hamburg coaches ever.
Ernst Happel? No.
Michael Oenning.
Ah, yeah, okay, sure.
Michael Oenning. Yes, I mean, if you really want to see a terrible managerial record, Google Michael Oenning. Anyways, a little bit of time for some quick fire updates. Jasmine, Hanover, out of the relegation dogfight after their 3-1 win against Bielefeld.
Amazing. They might not be relegated. Who would have thought? Yeah, I mean...
We tipped at the top of the table, at least 2 of us did.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a disastrous season. Stefan Leitl's still there. They still have so much talent in their team, and we are talking about them surviving relegation. It really sums it up for itself. I thought he was going to get sacked after the Heidenheim game when they went 3-0 down after the first half, but after they said, oh, he'll only be sacked if it's a big loss.
And it's not big enough.
It was 3-0 at halftime. Apparently not, but I mean, he stopped it at 3-0, so that isn't... I would say anything more than 3 is big. I think 3 is the limit.
3 is just about adequate performance level. I mean, only conceded 3 goals against Heidenheim, right? Come on.
Yeah.
They're almost topping the table.
Karlsruhe is above them, for fuck's sake.
Oh, come on, Karlsruhe. Mrs. Pottymouth.
Jesus, I mean, look, so I'm sorry, but Magdeburg are 2 points behind them. Nuremberg's 4 points behind them, and that's actively in relegation race. So, yeah, well done for beating... Who is it? Arminia Bielefeld.
A former Bundesliga side.
Yeah, well done for beating the one... The probably the only other one who is performing worse than Hanover, Arminia Bielefeld, because they've still got... They kept, like, a good part of their talent. Like, Robin Hack. Okay, they lost Amos Pieper. But yeah, Robin Hack's still there. That should be enough for not relegation. So...
Yes. Talking about not wanting to be relegated, Hansa Rostock, first win in ages, 2-0 over Greuther Fürth, who actually seem out of it at this point. Again... Alois Schwarz doing the magic? Can he turn it around?
Okay, Hansa Rostock has one of the easiest run-ins left, with their opponents averaging 1.12 points per game. So they definitely have the better run compared to Regensburg, Bielefeld, and Sandhausen. So that could be Alois Schwarz time once again.
It's Schwarz time once again. Anyways, Mike, Jahn, Regensburg, and Sandhausen, they actually get draws against Kaiserslautern and Paderborn, while Nuremberg gets a surprise win against Fortuna to get some much-needed breathing space. So, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, you know what I need to say now. You can't rely on anything in Bundesliga 2, but there is one golden rule. Sandhausen will never be relegated. And I stick to that. So their upcoming games, and Jasmine mentioned it already, they are playing Regensburg, Braunschweig, Rostock. They will definitely manage. And on the last match day, they play at home against HSV. And if they need to sort anything out on that day, they will.
Dennis Diekmeyer is going to do the business, I tell you. Dennis Diekmeyer. Mark those words. I was preparing myself mentally to do the notes for this script. I was actually following the Sandhausen game sort of peripherally, and they were actually 2-0 down against Paderborn and then went back and managed to, you know, get to 2-2 and almost got a winner. So, it felt a little bit like Robert De Niro in The Godfather 3 when he's like talking to that priest from the Vatican when he's just saying like, well, every time I think I'm out of it, they pull me straight back in. And that, you know, that's just the thing about Sandhausen. Every time you think they're relegated, they pull you straight back in. As Mike rightly points out.
They do.
One last addition, I think we've already gone over time, but this is too good not to mention. Fortuna Düsseldorf, they have made some headlines. So, question is, how much are you willing to pay for a football ticket? Mike mentioned 59 euros might be a little bit on, you know, the pricey side. But if you want to pay nothing at all, if that is your answer, Fortuna Düsseldorf should be your team going forward. Tell me what that is, Mike.
Yeah, well, we don't have any details yet because the news came in just before we started recording. But Fortuna Düsseldorf just announced that they plan for the far future to give free entrance to everybody. And they will test it in the next season in 3 games, and they don't do it because they want to. They just have sponsors who will help them to do it. And of course, they do have a big stadium with a, I think, 50% average at the moment. But let them go back into Bundesliga for 1 and play against, I don't know, Cologne, Dortmund, Schalke. How do they want to do that? So I don't know. And probably the tickets will then be available on eBay, via GoGo, you name it. And it will definitely not be for free. So yeah, we don't have any details yet. It sounds like a good plan. Football should be affordable to everyone. But if you do have a capacity that is not enough, and it won't be enough for Düsseldorf in the first league, yeah, I don't have really ideas how they will split those tickets. And but of course, it's better than charging 59 euros for the away end in a second Bundesliga match.
There you go. I mean, that is probably a story that we are going to follow intently going forward. But as you mentioned, there are a couple of pitfalls there. Anyways, this is it for part one of the show. We'll be right back with all the lower league madness. Welcome back, part two of the show, and this is where we talk about the Dritte League and, you know, other lower league stuff going on. And, well, we have to start in Zwickau. Probably a sentence that nobody's ever said.
I was about to say.
But we do have to start our segment about the Dritte League, indeed, in Zwickau. So, here's the thing. On Sunday, FSV welcomed Rot-Weiss Essen in what could only be considered to be a relegation six-pointer. So the boys from the east, they were second to bottom in the table, and they needed a win to drag RWE back into the relegation dogfight and to get closer to safety themselves. With a win, they could have reduced the distance to safety to a mere 4 points. However, we never saw the conclusion of that match. Why?
Yeah, well, they were 1-0 up close to halftime, but then a professional foul brought up a red card and a free kick. And the free kick led to a penalty because of a handball in the wall, and this led to the 1-1 draw. So being one man down, 45 minutes left, really bad luck in those 2 minutes. But it got worse. The referee, Nicolas Winter, went into the locker room, and on his way he was attacked by someone who threw a beer directly in his face. So not the cup or something, but just the beer, the liquid, but from a distance of 1 yard. So there were some discussions after that, but in the end the game was suspended, and it's pretty clear that the result will be a 2-0 or 3-0 win for Rot-Weiß Essen. And to make it even more funny, the guy who threw the beer was a sponsor of the club.
Well, I mean, if it'd been a fan, though, I mean, it's not unimaginable that a fan could have done that. If it had been a fan, we would have gotten the standard phrases of this, not being a fan, these people don't belong in stadiums, shame on them, that I would consider them to be, you know, local terrorists. That's what they are. But now, we actually do have a dude who spends his actual money on a football club, who is presumably a VIP. His money buys players. It keeps the wheels rolling at a club that has been struggling financially. Which, you know, all of this really begs the question, how is the DFB going to handle this? And how are Zwickau going to react to the predicament that they find themselves in? I mean, could they potentially forgive the guy, saying that, you know, he is actually a very, very nice fella?
Maybe don't give him seats that he can chuck a beer from that closeness. It's silly, isn't it? It's funny because we talk about, like, fan behaviour, and a lot of the stories I've heard, especially when it comes to beer throwing, and in some stadiums you can see the sections who throw the most crap. And a lot of those, especially in lower league, are actually VIP and sponsors. So next time you're in the third league, have a look for that, because you can see quite a few. I mean, I could go on to a complete rant of saying why maybe those, the sponsors and VIPs, throw stuff and throw beer, because maybe for once in their life they cannot control something that they like to control, which is the result of how their team plays. But if you're their sponsor or fan, it shouldn't matter. You follow the rules of the stadium like you follow the laws in when you're walking down the street, and they should be treated in the same way a fan should, especially stadium-wise. I can understand why they may feel that they shouldn't get as harsh of a punishment, but it's their own stupidity that has led them to that situation, and only themselves to blame for it costing his own money, basically. If their team loses, if they get relegated by 2 points because of the automatic result, that's all down to him. And well, you can argue all day what his punishment should be. I think if one cannot control their emotions to the point where you basically throw a beer in someone's face or abuse someone in that way at a sporting event, it needs to be looked at kind of seriously, and you need to be at least pushed into the background for until people forget about you.
Yes, indeed. I mean, given what happened, did the ref and his team reach the right decision? Or should they have actually toughed it out with the beer-throwing unfriendly crowd? And I'm going to ask that question. I'm asking the lower league referee himself. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, well, there were some statements on social media like, well, it was only beer. What if it had rained? They were water on their head. Will we stop every single game with rain from now on? So that's, of course, totally bullshit. So you might wonder why they act this hard, because it's only liquid. But from my point of view, as a referee on grassroots level, this is the only correct solution. So if you don't sanction this, what would happen in lower leagues where you might have no security or even your linesman for support. So such an action can't be accepted, and to suspend the game is the only correct decision. On the other hand, I read from people who demanded a lifelong stadium ban for this. Well, I'm not a supporter or a friend of this, so to lose the game and probably also getting a huge fine should be okay. And of course, if Zwickau decided not to let him in for the rest of the season or not to give him any more beer, I'm also fine with that. But no need to ban him for lifetime. That's cool. That doesn't make sense.
And I just wanted to add, I think Zwickau are, I guess, handling it as well as a team are probably going to be fined up to their heads can be. Their president has said that they're going to review security measures and how such a thing could have been averted, because if a VIP can throw a beer, let's be honest, fans have thrown beers at officials before. We saw the Bochum match in the Bundesliga last season against Gladbach, which got called off and awarded to Gladbach. They were 3-0 up anyway, but besides the point. And if review security measures of how this instance could have been averted, could they have an extendable tunnel to stop beers, could we just stop doing stupid things as people, because otherwise if this doesn't stop, it might turn into a greater ban and greater measures on things like beers pitch side and drinking in games. In obviously in the UK, you cannot drink alcohol in view of the pitch, so you cannot take beers to your seats. If stupid things like this keep happening, we might see similar bans, and no one wants that.
Yeah, I mean, in the UK, if you want to have a carling, you'll be very disappointed to find out that the quality of the beer is shite. And additionally, yes, you actually do that. You have to drink that beer whilst you're not in the stadium, or, you know, watching the match in the stadium. You're actually behind, you know, that the entrance to where the stand is. So
concourse,
that's all around disappointing. Anyways, yes, the Regionalliga updates. Mike, what's been going on in the fourth tier of German football?
Yeah, quick and dirty. So Preußen Münster has been promoted on the weekend. They will be back in League 3 next year. And it's also a very tight fight between Energie Cottbus and Rot-Weiß Erfurt in the Regionalliga Nordost. But on the weekend, Erfurt lost at BFC Dynamo Berlin. And therefore, Energie Cottbus now are 3 points clear. Remember that the champion of that Regionalliga needs to do a playoff game against the champion of the Regionalliga Bayern. And there we still have Unterhaching at the top, and they are 9 points clear, so they will be champion. But they have not announced yet if they go for the third league or if it's too big risk from a financial perspective. So still some unclear things on that.
Great. Time for one last quick story. Well, we do love a good fifth tier record, and former HSV Fortuna Düsseldorf and Werder Bremen player Martin Harnik has actually broken a record that seemingly was meant for eternity. But alas, it wasn't. So what has Harnik done?
He scored 45 goals already in this season, and the record up to now was 41, scored by, well, you all know that, Peter Hartwig in 1981-82.
I mean, Peter Hartwig cannot go anywhere in the entire world without being asked if, you know, people can buy his drinks for him.
Yeah, he played, you all know that, for the famous Hummelsbütteler SV.
Who hasn't been there?
Yeah, and Harnik scored now 45 goals for, you all know it, TuS Dassendorf. And there are still 3 games left for scoring even more.
Mike, any thoughts about the club that he's playing for in the Oberliga Hamburg?
Yeah, well, TuS Dassendorf, you might have never heard about that. And the reason for this is not that they are not successful. So they have been champion in the Hamburg Oberliga for many years in a row. And they do have a big sponsor in the background who makes it possible that people like Martin Harnik play there. So they always made it pretty clear that they have no ambitions to get promoted to Regionalliga, which seems a little bit odd. So if you spend your money in this way, why don't you want to have the maximum of success? So on the other hand, it would be tough for them to play in the Regionalliga. They would probably need to play somewhere else and not being allowed to play at home. And I can understand that they don't want to play somewhere else. So we would need to discuss the security regulations for the Dritte Liga and for the Regionalliga, but we might need a separate episode to do that.
Great. That is going to be the most listened episode of Talking Foosball ever. The safety regulations of the Regionalliga and the Dritte Liga. Mike goes on and on and on.
It's just one rant. 2 hours.
I think with the prospect of that being recorded 2 weeks from now, I think it's a great way of ending this show. Anyways, guys, great having you on. Jasmine, tell our listeners where they can find your work and where they can find you on Twitter before I let you go.
You can find me on Twitter _JasmineBarber. You can find all my work there because that's the easiest place to find me for now.
Great. And Mike, if people want to get in touch with you talking about regulations in the lower leagues, where shall they do that?
Yeah, they can contact me on Twitter @MikeKru, or they can read my work on the Millanton.
If you want to get in touch with me, Nick Wildhagen, and talk about, I don't know, random stuff, just read the shards if you're interested. You can get in touch with me @NormMusings. You can get in touch with the podcast if you want to give us any feedback on our episodes, or just drop a line and say hi at Talking Foosball. Talking Foosball actually does have its own Patreon account, and there we actually do have a series called Matchday Moments. And surprise, surprise, next week's episode is going to feature Energie Cottbus. You know, one of the lower league sides we just talked about. So check out our Patreon account, patreon.com/talkingfoosball. You can support us with as little as $3 a month and get loads and loads and loads of historic content. Anyways, this episode here has been produced by Aiden Rantoul. Aiden, I hope you are happy about Magdeburg finally getting a little bit more featured on this show. Up next on this channel is Talking Foosball Direct. Until next time, it is goodbye for now.